Welcome, everyone. I call the meeting to order of the Senate State Government, Finance and Policy and Elections Committee. Today being Tuesday, February 15th, 2022. Again, to confirm, this is a hybrid hearing. So we have members participating via Zoom, as well as the committee today here as well. At any rate, I'm going to go ahead. We're going to do a roll call. Since this is a hybrid hearing, we're going to do a roll call. So, Ms. Wilson, would you go ahead and call the roll?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Present.
Senator Howe.
Present.
Senator Carlson.
Present.
Senator Clausen.
Present.
Senator Fateh.
Present.
Senator Curran.
Present.
Senator Pratt.
Present.
Senator Osmick.
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Okay, members, we're going to go ahead today on our agenda. What we're doing now on this day is one part of the governor's budget request, supplemental budget request. And so the agencies we have here today. So we have informed the agencies ahead of time. You have maximum of 10 minutes to make your presentation. We want to be sure and allow time for members to ask questions. So I want to remind all of you, I know you always have good things to talk about, but whatever those good things are, it's 10 minutes. With that, we're going to go ahead and start with our first one, Commissioner Alice Roberts Davis from the Department of Administration. Welcome to the committee, and you can go ahead and give your name for the audio record, and then go ahead and make your presentation, Commissioner.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. For the record, I'm Alice Roberts Davis, Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Administration. Thank you for the opportunity to provide an overview of the Governor's supplemental budget recommendations for admin. Our agency has a wide-ranging set of responsibilities that ultimately touch every part of state government. Admin's duty is to help government best serve Minnesotans. We work primarily behind the scenes to provide business functions that are the administrative backbone for public agencies. We do, to a lesser extent, also provide direct services to residents. Our partners that are internal to state government rely on us to provide the critical core services that help keep them operationally effective. These services include overseeing the state's annual purchasing of $3 billion in goods and services. We manage its 6,200 state-owned buildings, 850 property leases, and more than 280 annual construction projects. We also manage a fleet of more than 2,000 vehicles and $19.2 billion of insured state assets. When you entered the building today, you likely saw our facilities maintenance crews who help keep the Minnesota Senate building, state capitol, and other capitol complex buildings operational and clean. Admin's supplemental budget requests reflect our efforts to improve these services to our partners. First, the governor recommends $1.9 million in FY23 and $400,000 ongoing from the general fund for state procurement innovation and participation. This request covers the 35% state match to federal U.S. Department of Defense funds for the Procurement Technical Assistance Center, or PTAC. PTAC offers free counseling, education, training, and guidance for all Minnesota businesses who wish to sell their products and services to local, state, and federal governments. PTAC staff are geographically located throughout the state. This is because the ability to connect with local PTAC counselor makes contracting less intimidating and more accessible for all Minnesota business owners. To complement this work, a disparity study examines whether there is evidence of discrimination that affects minority and women business owners in the marketplace and assesses measures to address any such discrimination. Disparity studies are necessary to provide a legal basis for race and gender-based programs. The state collaborated with other local units of government to share the cost and information on the last disparity study, which was completed in 2017. Admin's intent would be to again partner with other local entities to complete this work. As this information ages, it becomes less useful, and to best understand where inequities exist, disparities should be studied every 5 to 7 years. Next, the governor recommends $301,000 in FY23 and $198,000 ongoing from the general fund to improve human resources and financial services at admin. These funds would enhance staff resources in our human resources and financial management offices to boost hiring and retention practices. Small agencies don't have the staff or capacity for human resources or financial services, so they rely on admin's small agency resource team, or SMART, to provide those services. Since 2019, the number of SMART partners served by admin's human resources and financial management divisions has doubled from 19 to 38. This proposal funds the capacity for admin to meet the increased demand for personnel and accounting services. Small agencies, boards, and councils currently served by SMART have structures and capacity constraints that make supplementary support in the areas of leadership, human resources, financial management, board support, and controls necessary in certain circumstances. These requests can sometimes go outside the bounds of the support the SMART program is currently designed to provide. The governor recommends studying a potential office of small agencies to address these needs. Next, the governor recommends $630,000 in FY23 from the general fund to address the revenue loss in the fleet fund. Admin's Fleet Services Division forecasts that decreases in fleet usage due to the increased telework and virtual meetings will result in lower revenues in the fleet fund. Fewer vehicles will be replaced in fiscal year 2023 due to changes in work patterns resulting from the pandemic. This will cause a reduction in the vehicle's leased revenue needed to pay for the Fleet Services Division's operating expenses. Based on our current analysis, it is anticipated that the enterprise fleet size may be reduced by as much as 12% by 2025. This request stabilizes the fund while admin continues improving the fleet with lower life cycle costs and greater fuel efficiency. Next, the governor recommends $400,000 in FY23 and ongoing from the general fund to improve grants administration oversight. This request funds the Office of Grants Management's full implementation of existing statute language. It will enable the office to drive innovation, develop alternative strategies, and foster collaboration across sectors to improve grants administration and outreach. It will also establish a baseline understanding of the impact of current state agency practices and state-funded grants throughout Minnesota's communities. This includes an enterprise resource to assist state agencies with effectively implementing state-funded grants that focus on specific communities. It also provides dedicated staff for outreach and training to encourage and assist community groups in applying for state-funded grants. Additionally, the governor recommends a budget-neutral policy to enhance state grant administration with no new funds proposed. The initiative allows state agencies to retain for grant administration up to 5% of grant funds for new legislatively named grants and up to 10% for new competitively awarded grants. This change would ensure that all new grants have the minimal funds available to provide an appropriate level of service for grantees and protect the state's investment in the grant by ensuring compliance with state law and policies. Next, the governor recommends $150,000 in FY23 and ongoing from the general fund to foster collaboration and resolve disputes. The Office of Collaboration and Dispute Resolution, or OCDR, uses collaborative processes, public engagement, and the science of human relations to help government and stakeholders develop wise and durable solutions to seemingly intractable issues. OCDR currently receives more requests for service than the office can accommodate, and the volume of requests steadily increases each year. These funds would support additional capacity to help OCDR meet the current demand for services from state agencies, local governments, and the legislature. The governor recommends $200,000 in FY23 and ongoing from the general fund for field archaeology. These funds would implement an update to the Private Cemeteries Act. The proposed changes include modernizing terminology, clarifying authority over cemetery assessments, and requiring the Office of the State Archaeologist to maintain a database of cemetery locations. Terminology changes will more accurately define the places and processes described in statute. To strengthen the authority of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council over condition assessments of cemeteries deemed to be American Indian, the proposal clarifies their role and when they control the assessment. The legislation also specifies when the Office of the State Archaeologist will partner with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council on condition assessments. Additionally, the legislation will provide greater flexibility so qualified professionals and the appropriate reports experts can be utilized to assess or identify cemeteries. Implementing this proposal will require additional capacity in the Office of the State Archaeologist to handle condition assessments and coordination between entities. Funds will also be used to establish a database of all known suspected cemeteries in Minnesota. Next, the governor recommends eliminating the $200 fee for open meeting law advisory opinions. Minnesota statute gives the Commissioner of Administration permissive authority to issue non-binding advisory opinions on data practices and the open meeting law. The Data Practices Office administers this process for the commissioner. Currently, anyone who wants to request an advisory opinion about compliance with the open meeting law pays the $200 fee. However, advisory opinions about data practices issues are free to everyone. For consistency, the governor recommends eliminating the $200 fee for open meeting law opinion requesters. Admin can absorb the anticipated lost revenue from this change, which is estimated to be less than $1,000 per year. The governor recommends $1.306 million in FY23 and $1.159 million ongoing to establish the Office of Enterprise Translations. This office would translate written materials for state agencies in Spanish, Hmong, and Somali in a timely manner. The proposal also creates a fund for agencies to access the additional languages or when more technical expertise is needed. The office would also provide language-specific web pages with links to translated materials on state agency websites. The ability to consistently and efficiently provide information is a challenge that state government must meet in order to effectively serve all Minnesotans. For many programs that receive federal funding, providing translated materials is mandatory, yet the state is not addressing these requirements at an enterprise level. Without financial resources providing specifically for translation, agencies are left with the difficult choice between directing funds to their core operations and the translation of key materials. When translation services are contracted with external vendors, at times the services can be too slow to be useful for agency and public needs. Access to quality translations would enable agencies to provide necessary information to all Minnesotans. And finally, we are carrying this item on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations, or AMPRS. The governor recommends $773,000 in FY23 from the general fund for the AMPRS Community Radio News Service. This is a one-time grant request. The funds will be used to create and distribute daily five-minute newscasts, a weekly 30-minute newscast, and weekly newscasts in Hmong, Somali, and Spanish. The newscast will provide information and diverse perspectives from within the communities, which isn't readily available from traditional media sources. The community news projects will share the voices and stories of Minnesota's BIPOC, rural, and disability communities. The Department of Administration will administer this grant. That completes my overview of the governor's supplemental budget recommendations for the Department of Administration. Thank you for your time today. I tried to adhere as best I could to the 10 minutes, and I'll stand for any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. I appreciate your presentation today. With that, members, we will take some time for questions, and Senator Osmek, you're first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, on page 9, the advisory opinion consistency slide, I know it's only $1,000. The problem that I have with removing the $200 fee is that I strongly believe that you're going to be opening up the floodgates. There are a lot of people that love to make life difficult for city councils if they disagree with their decisions, or school boards for that matter. And there are many fishing expeditions, I believe, could be embarked upon by not having some fee that offsets the amount of money that is necessary or the amount of time that's necessary to process an opinion, because certainly lawyers don't work for free, no matter where they are. I guess I would like to hear your opinion on that. I've just seen enough to know that not having a fee, going from a $200 fee to no fee whatsoever, could cause a lot of workload for people going on those fishing expeditions. Can you respond to that, please?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator, based on the department's outlook on this, they feel that they get very few of these requests at this point in time, and that the cost of doing the charging for the administrative fee on that actually cost them more money than doing the actual $200 fee or administering the actual $200 fee at this point in time. And so after weighing all of those different factors, they've determined that it actually is more cost effective for them to waive the $200 fee. And that's just based on their years of experience in administering this program.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that commentary, and actually I almost would agree with you that if the cost of administering this isn't worth the $200, I'd probably agree with that. The only issue is, you're going to have a flood of these start up. Part of the reason I think you don't have them is because I don't think people want to go on a fishing expedition if they got to pay the freight. And now if you're going to have no fee, I will say monitor this, but don't be surprised if suddenly you have a 3,000% increase in the number of advisories you have, because people are going to be looking for trouble. And by the way, Commissioner, the other thing that I get concerned about too is that it's not necessarily the workload on your side, but if there's an open meeting violation, the local jurisdiction that has to assist you and respond to this is going to have staff time involved on their side. Promoting additional fishing expeditions, as I keep calling it, is a very, very dangerous place to go. So, thank you.
Okay, members, any other? Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, when we look at, I think it's slide 5, and on the fleet fund, you said there was are we expecting a 12% reduction in the fleet, or was that the fleet size has been reduced by 12%?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Howe, no, we are projecting that could happen. Senator, that if we are not, that if we're not careful, that's what could happen. So we have not seen a 12% decrease, but that is something that could happen.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So are those fleet vehicles leased, or does the state own them?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator, the fleet vehicles are owned by the state, and we lease them to the agencies.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if we would just go ahead and put those vehicles that we have, if they're not being used currently, if we just sell those vehicles, couldn't we take care of our shortage or and then the other question I have there, I would have to believe that if there's a reduced usage, there's reduced cost in maintenance. I'm struggling with that concept just because they're not being used. I mean, if we own them and they're not using them, why don't we just reduce the number, and people have to, if they're going to come back to work, and they'll just have to schedule those activities around when they can get a vehicle.
Thank you, Senator Howe. Any other questions? Commissioner, for me, it's very important that we get the actual language. And can you update the committee on the status of actual bill language for the Department of Administration? Commissioner.
Absolutely. That is at the revisers, Madam Chair.
At the revisers. Okay. Do we have an estimated time of arrival, Commissioner?
I can check into that, Madam Chair. I don't have that off the top of my head.
Okay. That's very, very important to me. We have this hearing, but the actual language is really, really what we go by here. But I appreciate your presentation and doing all that. It'll save time later when we actually have the budget, and then we will have had some of this testifying. In regards to some of the languages, one of the things realizing many times that the individual dialects really make a difference. So one translation into one specific language There are many, many dialects, and many of these languages have people who only understand oral, do not have the capacity to read, especially once they've come to America. They in coming from their countries, reading those languages. So when I take a look at this, that's the input that I have gotten from folks. Would you like to comment on how you would handle the various dialects, Commissioner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We would have two staff people within the Office of Enterprise Translations for each language, and that would help us with working towards the different dialects that need to be interpreted. I think that what's really important here is that the pandemic has shown us that having information readily available to people that we can get out in a timely manner so that they can be armed with information, both in literature and also on web pages, has been lacking on the state's behalf. And so that is why the Office of Enterprise Translation is very important, something that we really should be able to have. Working with contracted vendors is often slow. They don't understand the messaging that the state is trying to convey. They often don't understand some of the technical language that we're using when we're talking about everything from healthcare to agriculture. And so having those types of services in-house and to your point, somebody who can get a good hold of what those different dialects that we need to be in tune with would be extremely helpful to have within the state and that expertise as part of our state team.
Thank you, Commissioner. There are dozens and dozens of dialects. Interesting, even in the United States, English. You go to different parts of the country and how they convey and how they communicate. But this is also predicated upon them being able even to read. There's a lot of issues that are in this particular thing. Senator Carlson, I believe you have a question.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Carlson, before you start, would you take your hand down right away? Because the tendency is, folks, you forget to do that, and then I'll never know for sure. So if you go ahead, Senator Carlson.
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I guess what I'd like to do is I'd like to echo Senator Osmek's concern about the removal of the rather small but concerning fee for getting legal advice, advisory opinions, that I believe, and I think Senator Osmek is absolutely correct, that this could open up a floodgate that would be hard to shut down. There are people that do want to, visit a lot of busy work on agencies. And I think we see that in some other agencies. And I don't know that there's any way to charge for that kind of information or, by the page or anything like that. But I do have a concern that this might be in a very attractive way to just make your life hard and have to demand a lot of information from the agency. So I want you to approach that very carefully.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Senator Carlson. I appreciate your comments.
Thank you, sir.
Members, we've got a full agenda, so I've allowed some questions as we go along because I think it's easier to follow. But we're going to go ahead to the next item on the agenda. And the next one is Commissioner Showalter and Deputy Commissioner Britta Ratan. Welcome to the committee. Glad to have you here again. Look forward to seeing you. And if you just go ahead and say your name again for the audio record and titles and so on, and then go ahead and make your presentation.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of MMB. I'm pleased to join you today with Deputy Commissioner Britta Ratan, who will be walking through our requests. In particular, there's a significant item that we want to make sure we get you some background information on, and we'll spend much of our time on that particular item. But before I turn it over to her, Madam Chair, I just want to introduce her. Many of you may recognize her because she had been Assistant Commissioner and State Budget Director at MMB previously, and has now taken on these sort of broader duties within our agency as Deputy Commissioner, passing the role on to Anna Mengi as State Budget Director. The other key change in terms of people you're going to see in State Government Committee is Kevin McHenry, who's taking over for Laura Lane as our legislative director. So you'll see Kevin, and we just look forward to working with you and the committee during the course of this year. With that really brief introduction, given our limited time, I want to turn it over to Britta to walk through our recommendations and requests for this year.
Thank you, Commissioner Showalter. Deputy Commissioner Raton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my name is Britta Raton, Deputy Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. Thanks so much for the opportunity to testify today on our supplemental budget requests. The first request is for sustainable and stabilizing the funding of our state's ERP systems. This is our Enterprise Resource Planning System. If you'll turn to the next slide, this slide gives you a sense of the broad scope of these systems. These systems really support the work of state government in the areas of accounting, human resources, payroll, and learning management. And so I just want to make sure it's clear just how broad these systems are. If you'll turn to the next slide, you can see just the volume of transactions that these systems handle, and they are used by all of the agencies in state government and really provide the backbone of state government operations. Turning to the next slide, we currently do not have a sustainable funding model for these systems. In recent years, we spend approximately $22 million per year in order to maintain and operate our statewide ERP systems. Under current law, we have the authority to bill other agencies up to $10 million per year. So there's obviously a gap between the $10 million we can bill other agencies and the overall cost of about $22 million that we've been spending. So that means that M&B is really relying on a variety of other funding sources in order to meet our ERP system's cost and to absorb growing inflationary pressure on our spend for these systems. We've primarily relied on one-time funding sources for upgrades and projects to support the system. And much of that funding has come through Odyssey Fund requests. These are the requests we send to the legislature at the end of a biennium, asking to, instead of having operating dollars cancel, to hold them in an account in order to support systems updates going forward. So we've made use of those Odyssey Fund requests to support our systems. But the other thing I want to note, and you'll see this on the next slide, is that we've also been relying on an accumulated balance in our statewide systems billing account in order to meet the needs of the systems in recent years. So what this chart is showing you is, and this the prior slide was an annual look at the costs of our systems. This is a biennial look, and that's important to that distinction. But this is a look at our statewide systems account and the balances in the last few biennia. So what's really important to note is you can see the revenues in the account are $20 million per biennium. That's based on the $10 million per year that we can bill to other agencies. So that's supporting $20 million per biennium in spend. You can see that our expenditures in each biennium have exceeded that. And that's because the needs of the system are greater than the resources we have coming in each year to support it. And we did have an accumulated balance from early in our implementation of SWIFT in order to be able to spend down the balance now. But what you can see from this chart is that in our current biennium, we don't have enough resources, we don't have enough accumulated balance in the account to support the full spend that is required for the system. And so you can see we have a structural imbalance, and we've had a structural imbalance for a number of years, but this is the year, this is really the tipping point year where we don't have enough resources in the account to continue the spend at the current level. If you turn to the next slide, so this slide is just showing you that in recent years we have been flagging that we don't have adequate funding to support the maintenance and operations of these systems. We have made a number of requests of the legislature Typically, those requests have been funded at a far lower level than the original request. Turning to the next slide. So what we really want to highlight for you all is, with this lack of predictable, sustainable funding, this has meant that we can't do all of the maintenance that's required for this system. We're not adequately updating all of the systems, and we have one in particular, our data warehouse system, which is what holds all of our historical information for both HR and for our accounting transactions. That data warehouse has not been updated since it was put in place about a decade ago. So because we haven't had the adequate resources to do that, that's kind of the system that has been waiting on hold for us to have enough resources. All of this means that it leads to security and performance risks of our systems when we can't adequately update and maintain the system. The other issue we have is that we have agency partners that wish our systems did more. Because we barely have enough resources to kind of meet that minimum threshold of maintaining and updating our system, we haven't been able to build out additional capacity in the system to deliver on those business needs of agencies. And what that means is that agencies end up kind of building their own side subsystems to meet their needs, which is just an inefficient model across the enterprise and leads to higher costs overall. You turn to the next slide. So this slide really gets to the solution that we are proposing to you today. Our request in the short term is general fund resources to stabilize our systems. So the request is for $6.3 million in FY 2023 and $17.9 million in the biennium 24 and 25. This is really to address the funding gap that we're currently seeing in our statewide systems account, as well as provide enough resources to do an upgrade to the data warehouse, which I had mentioned is the one system we haven't been able to do kind of an overall upgrade to since it was put in place. So that's kind of the short-term stabilizing the system piece of the proposal, and that's for one-time resources. Going forward, we would like to eliminate the cap on the statewide systems billing account. That's the account that's capped in law at $10 million per year. This would allow MMB to bill agencies an amount sufficient to support the statewide systems beyond this current budget period. As part of that, we would also establish an advisory group of state agencies. They would help advise on the amount of the billings as well as the services from the systems that they're getting. So they could help advise us on whether there is interest across the enterprise to build out certain enhancements to the systems to meet their business needs as well. Turning to the next slide. This really breaks down the component parts of our general fund ask in this current budget horizon. So it really breaks down across three areas. The first is to just address that gap in the statewide systems account funding. So as you saw on an earlier slide, we've been using balance in that account to support spending on the maintenance and operations of our systems beyond the resources available in each year. And this, and we've depleted that balance. And so this line item of $1.3 million in 23 and then $8.6 million in 24-25 provides the ongoing resources to maintain the spending at that level. The next line shows the spending for the data warehouse. Thank you for the data warehouse upgrade. That is the one component of our statewide systems that we have been unable to update holistically because we haven't had the resources available to do it. That would happen over a number of years, but it's $4 million in 23 and then $6.1 million in 24 and 25. And then additionally, we're seeing that we do need some additional capacity with additional FTEs, primarily at Minute, but as well as some business FTEs at MMB to support the work of the system. That's $1 million in 23 and then $3.2 million in 24 and 25. So that's how it rolls up to the full general fund ask over this budget horizon. Turning to the next slide. This is just a slide that kind of gives an overview of the vision we have with our statewide systems. The general fund ask is really to stabilize the current state of our system, so bring all of our systems into supported status, make sure we're addressing the security and reliability of these key systems to state government operations. And then we have the foundation to really build future improvements. Then with the lifting of the cap on the statewide systems billing account, we would work with our partner agencies to identify what the needs are going forward and develop a roadmap for change with our ERP systems. And that leads us to the stage where we can really execute on that roadmap, and as well as begin to explore the next generation of our ERP model. You can turn to the next slide. I just want to briefly highlight, there was an Office of the Legislative Auditor report in 2018 that highlighted that we do not have a reliable and sustainable funding source for these systems. One option within that report was potentially lifting the cap on the statewide systems billing account. Additionally, MMB did work with an external consultant to look at our statewide systems funding model. Their advice in that report was to lift the cap on the statewide systems billing account and allow the full cost of maintaining these systems to be billed to the users. And then if you'll just turn to the last slide. And this is really consistent with some of the issues highlighted by the Blue Ribbon Council on Information Technology about the need to make sure we are consistently, reliably funding long-term IT system support. This is an issue not just for our state ERP systems, but across the enterprise. And so just wanting to highlight that this is an issue that they have highlighted that needs to be addressed. That is my summary of our statewide ERP system, our sustainable funding request for that system. And with that, I'll turn to the next few requests we have. This next request is for evaluating the impact of investments. This is $300,000 from the general fund in 23 and $900,000 from the general fund in 24 and 25 to expand the capacity for impact evaluation at MMB. This is work that's done by our results unit at MMB. And this evaluation work of that unit has really been supported on a bipartisan basis in recent years. This will allow them to expand the number of impact evaluations that they can complete each year. It creates capacity for these rigorous evaluations of new and innovative state investments. And these evaluations really provide insight to policymakers on whether the state services that we're funding are really achieving their desired outcomes for the participants and for taxpayers. And I just want to highlight before moving to the next that this team in Minnesota is really nation-leading in the results work that we are doing. You turn to the next slide. This next slide is about capital budget outreach and assistance. And this is a request for $314,000 from the general fund in 23 and $628,000 from the general fund in 24 and 25. This funding would support two additional FTE at MMB to expand our outreach and access to the capital budget process and increase our technical assistance. So one FTE would be in MMB's debt management division, which can really provide technical assistance to communities and nonprofits that have traditionally not participated in the state's capital budget process to understand the technical aspects of the bonding process. Additionally, there would be an FTE in the budget division at MMB that would allow MMB to do more work proactively raising awareness about the capital budget and the requirements associated with it to communities and nonprofits that have traditionally not participated in the process. Then turning to the next slide. This next request is for $1 million from the general fund in each year to support cross-agency coordination through the Children's Cabinet. This is establishing dedicated general fund resources for the administration and staffing of the Children's Cabinet. The Children's Cabinet is currently supported through interagency billing. This change would provide a more consistent and ongoing funding source to support this work, and it is also more consistent with how this coordination is funded in other states. The Children's Cabinet staff really provides support for coordination among agencies, as well as engagement with Minnesotans to drive action on issues that impact children, including education from birth onward, childcare access, workforce support, mental health, and other family and community supports.
So this Commissioner, we're running out of time, so I see you're going to be wrapping up, but we'll need to do that so we can get to questions and other presenters.
Certainly, I'll quickly go through the last slide. So this last slide is to replenish the COVID-19 Emergency Response Fund. This is a request for $500 million, $350 million from the general fund, $150 million from ARP. This establishes an account for emergency COVID-19 pandemic response. And this is really a flexible source that allows quick and efficient response to changing conditions with the pandemic. If you recall, the governor had a similar account coming out of last session and used those resources to really quickly deploy funding to stabilize the healthcare system, to support testing and vaccination efforts, and to also enhance resources for sheltering and rental assistance. The ask is to be able to continue this flexible response to the pandemic going forward. And with that, Madam Chair, I can answer questions.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Ray Tan. I appreciate your presentation, and we'll go to member questions. Senator Curran, then I'll go to Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the a couple questions back to the original proposal on the ERP system. So today, you currently have $22 million a year to support it. Are all of the systems that you have housed in the new, in the cloud, or are they on our physical data center?
Deputy Commissioner Ratan.
Senator Curran, they are not housed in the cloud at this point in time. That is something that we would explore going forward with our next iteration of our ERP.
Senator.
Madam Chair.
Mute your laptop, maybe?
It's not mine.
Oh, okay. All right. Just checking.
Deputy Commissioner, could you help me understand? I don't know who's muted. Mine's muted. Sorry about that. Let's move forward. Minute also has a request to move all existing facilities. Yep, I can see mine is off. Okay, I think we're good. We're good. It turned on. So Deputy Commissioner, so Minute also has a request to move all the physical data center over into the cloud environment. Is that being accommodated in this request?
Senator, I know Deputy Commissioner Eichten is also available to talk about the intersection of those two, but I'll answer quickly and see if he wants to add anything. First off, this sustainable funding source for our systems is really kind of foundational to those next moves. Because if we do move to the cloud, we have much less control over our costs. So we need to make sure we have a reliable, sustainable funding model in place before we start taking on those additional costs that we don't have control over. Currently, because we have the funding model we have kind of more peaks and valleys with our spend. When we have resources available through an Odyssey account or through balance in our statewide systems billing account, we're able to put more money into the support of our systems. When we don't have those resources available, we have years where we spend less. And if we are moving to the cloud, my understanding, and Deputy Commissioner Eichten can add to this, we have much less control over the overall spend for our systems. And I don't know, Deputy Commissioner Eichten, if you want to add anything there.
Thank you, Ms. Raton. The Minnesota IT is going to be here presenting. I think they are the next on the agenda, Commissioner Tomes and so on. So let's leave that question and when... And,
Madam Chair, we can leave that for later. I just have one quick question, one follow-up. So of the total number of FTEs that are in the existing support infrastructure as it is today for all ERP systems and the number of new staff that you have in your proposal, I notice you're very clear and listed the number of new FTEs for everything in your proposal except the sustainable funding component of the ERP.
Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner Raton.
Thank you for the question, Senator. There are approximately 39 FTEs funded at MMB that support the overall infrastructure of our statewide systems and support the users of our statewide systems. Additionally, there are FTEs that are housed at Minute. There are 66 FTEs currently housed at Minute that support the maintenance operation and upgrades to those systems.
Madam Chair, how many new, I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Deputy Commissioner, how many new FTEs are you proposing for this component?
Deputy Commissioner Raton, new ones, new FTEs.
New FTEs overall in this proposal. We are proposing 6 new FTEs in FY23. That would grow to 10 new FTEs in FY24.
Deputy Commissioner Raton, you're speaking specifically to the IT portion of your request, correct?
It is to support the IT portion of our work, correct, but there are also FTEs within that request to support the business side as well.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Okay,
just a clarifying question, Madam.
Yeah, okay, Senator.
So, Deputy Commissioner, just so I understand the numbers, 6 FTE and then 10 FTE, are we talking a total of 10 by the end of the window, or are we talking 16 by the end of the window?
Deputy Commissioner.
A total of 10 by the end of the window.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Howe, another question or?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, Deputy Commissioner, I guess I'm on slide 6. I see that our expenditures in this time frame and the estimates fluctuate somewhat. Could you tell me why that fluctuates? And then the other question I have is, you have a huge beginning balance in 18-19. Where did that huge balance come from?
Deputy Commissioner.
Senator Howe, thanks for the question. Some of that fluctuation is based on the upgrades that were happening at that time. So there are times within that time horizon where we've brought in contractors to help with upgrading systems where needed. Or it can also be a significant hardware purchase during that time. So we could get into far more granular detail about the buildup in each of those years if you're interested, but it's not just FTEs, which would be more of a smooth line. There are projects that happen in that time period that have some fluctuations. The beginning balance, my understanding of that accrued balance back before the 18-19 biennium is that because we had a large upgrade to our SWIFT, our major accounting system that we needed to do, and we didn't have resources to do it, we had kind of held off on some upgrade work in order to accrue a balance, in order to have enough resources to do that significant upgrade to our SWIFT system.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. I think that lifting the cap, I think, will have the greatest impact as far as some of these things are going forward as I read these numbers. Senator Osmick, just a quick question if possible.
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Commissioner, your last slide indicates a large amount of money being put into stabilization of healthcare system, testing and vaccines, sheltering and rental assistance. That's a lot of money put into a pot that somebody gets to make a decision on how to spend. Just for clarification, is this going to be at the discretion of the governor without any guardrails, or what are the guardrails on the spending of this money? Are there criteria on what exactly it could be spent on, or is it just blanket authorization for those general purposes, and then the governor gets to decide what he wants to do and where he wants to place the money?
Deputy Commissioner.
Senator Osmick, thank you for the question. This recommendation is structured like the previous $500 million pot that was allocated last session, where the governor would make a proposal to the Legislative COVID Response Commission. It's the LCRC is the acronym we typically use in law. That has members from the House and the Senate, majority and minority members from both bodies. So the request is submitted to that that group of legislators, and there has to be a majority voting against the use of the dollars for that purpose in order to prevent the governor's recommendation from moving forward. But that is all outlined in existing law.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. I think we have some concerns about that, especially stage of budgeting where we are today. And I think we've expressed that. So members, I am going to go ahead and go on to our next agency to testify today, and that is Minnesota IT. Commissioner Tariq Tomes and Deputy Commissioner John Eiten. Not quite sure who is going to do the presentation, but with that, whoever is, whether it's Commissioner Tomes or Deputy Commissioner Eiten, would you please state your name and title for the audio record, and then go ahead and present your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name for the record is Tariq Tomes, and I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota IT Services and the Chief Information Officer for the state of Minnesota. I'm going to just give a real brief introduction, Madam Chair and committee members. We included a few introductory slides that I'm going to skip past just for the sake of time, that just give a little bit of background on Minnesota, and certainly if there are any questions related to any of that background material.
Commissioner, just before you launch into that, I just want to say that this committee will have a hard stop at 10 to 12. And at 10 to 12, we're going to have a hard stop. So think of your other agencies that are coming after you and make sure you leave some time for them. And that's also true for questions, members. Sorry to have interrupted you, Commissioner, but I thought it was more timely to say so now.
No problem at all. Fully understood, Madam Chair. So if we skip to slide four, Brandon, just from the governor's supplemental budget recommendations, the budget recommendations really are about improving our posture from a cyber and operational risk perspective and leveraging the power that cloud services provide us, improving resilience for services and applications, and Deputy Commissioner John Eiken could possibly touch on that as it relates to the previous question for the ERP, and really transforming Minnesotans' experience when interacting with state government in the most efficient way, allowing us to reuse things that work really well. I think the recent example from Human Services with the Min Benefits Program was a great example. Together with the legislative body and Senator Kiffmeyer, Madam Chair, with your support, certainly we have invested heavily in cybersecurity and improved our ability to defend and respond. Building bigger walls alone can't protect us. And these additional items that are in this supplemental budget ask are really critical to protecting Minnesota's digital infrastructure in the future, and making sure that services are transformed to meet the expectations of Minnesotans, and really to meet Minnesotans where they are. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Eiken to walk through the actual supplemental budget items.
Thank you, Commissioner. Deputy Commissioner Eitan, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is John Eitan. I'm Minnesota IT Services Deputy Commissioner. I'll move quickly through the change items. I'll speak first to the MMB ERP question. So the team is currently focused on standing up disaster recovery capability using an on-prem approach. The funding included in the minute change item would fund any move into the cloud, you know, where feasible, where appropriate for ERP systems. It would need to take a slightly different path than the path that many of the other applications in the state more than likely would take. However, we are looking at that in specific for future research and development and disaster recovery capabilities related to the ERP. So there's not duplication between the asks. The MMB ask supports the application level work, and the minute ask would support any shift of the infrastructure into the cloud. So with that, if there are no questions, I'll transition into minutes change items. The first one is related to application modernization. As Commissioner mentioned, the state has a significant amount of IT debt resulting from development of applications over the last several decades that now stand in need of modernization and replacement. Funding in this change item would enable a systematic approach to the modernization of those aging applications. We have over 2,000 applications across the executive branch, and we want to provide funding at an enterprise level to use a data-focused and really need-focused approach to modernizing those systematically. These apps create risk in our overall IT environment, puts at risk the agencies who rely on those applications, but also puts at risk the whole of the executive branch. And that's because these aging applications often contain vulnerabilities that exist in aging systems. They create doors for cyber actors to enter, to move laterally in our environment, and ultimately to steal or hold hostage data that is critical to effective government operations. I'm sure you've heard ransomware attacks. An enterprise approach will enable us to standardize these applications on commercially available platforms and services, reducing the complexity of our environment that has resulted from the previously siloed development of custom applications and agencies across state government. So by reducing this complexity and then housing these applications on cloud-based infrastructure, which is what we'll touch on in the next change item, with much more cost-effective continuity and recovery capabilities, will improve the reliability of these applications and help ensure that state government service delivery can continue to operate on a stable, resilient foundation. Lastly, I'll just note this type of enterprise approach enables the state to advance recommendations from the Blue Ribbon Council, which is now the Technology Advisory Council, because many of the most fundamental components that dictate the success or failure of IT modernization efforts really have nothing to do with coding or servers. The success depends on how well we and our business partners engage with frontline staff, users, and stakeholders to understand their pain points and problems, and a willingness to change the way we do our work, to alter, if not overhaul, our business processes and really put Minnesotans at the center of our system and service delivery designs. I will jump over the remainder here and just say, give the amounts. You can see on the right, 5.25 in the current biennium and 14.625 in the next biennium, so a ramp up as the process is put in place to identify and prioritize systems for modernization. Advancing the slides, I will not dwell on this one long, but to give you an idea of what the look and feel difference and the experience difference is between a legacy application and a modern application when attempting to interface with them via a mobile phone, you can see the difference. 1 hour application process, 15 minute in the modernized system. No document upload in the old one. So mobile phone-based, photo-based phone upload leads to much higher user satisfaction, as you'll see on the next slide with some of the comments that came in to the Department of Human Services. The next slide, if we could, to the Department of Human Services when they modernized the ApplyMN app. So just to give you an example of what this could look like many times over across the executive branch, tremendous feedback there. Moving forward, change item number two, we've discussed a little bit, is related to enterprise cloud transformation. This is really intended to accelerate the state's transition from traditional on-premise infrastructure into more modern public cloud service environments. There's a range of benefits associated with that transition that is well understood, you know, across both the private and the public sector, where this transition's been occurring for years. There's built-in continuity, resilience, and disaster recovery capabilities that just aren't feasible from a budget perspective for the state's, you know, large portfolio of applications if you would do it via on-premise hosting. There's scalable cybersecurity capabilities that give us a much more cost-effective path to continue to improve our cybersecurity posture. And then there's opportunities to speed innovation and enable much more rapid solutioning via cloud service capabilities that just aren't available in physical data centers in the state. And then long-term computing cost avoidance for state government. And this is really achieved through the ability to pay for what you use and what you're using right now, rather than paying for what you'll need to use at a peak period at some point during the year. That's the well-understood cost benefit of moving to the cloud over the long term.
Commissioner, we're going to need you to, if you're going to take 5 minutes for each slide, we're going to run out of time, and I want to be sure you get through. So we have the PowerPoint presentation in front of us, and I think we can expedite it a bit as we read while you talk about some of these things.
All right, Madam Chair, happy to go even faster. Let's just move on to the change item number 3, the cyber grant program. You can see the funds on the right there, the state match required to pull down the federal dollars. 80% of those funds will go to local government, and we'll have a broad-based group of folks helping to allocate and make those decisions. With the next change item, number 4, is related to the Children's Cabinet. This is a group talked about in the MMB presentation. They've identified several opportunities for interagency service delivery that are not currently within IT budgets for those agencies, so we're creating an enterprise fund to support those projects and yield a much better user experience for families and children. The last two change items, number 5, is related to application accessibility. We're asking for funds here. You can see the amounts on the right for an independent third-party assessment of existing online services and applications to identify accessibility improvements and create a roadmap for those improvements moving forward. And then change item number 6 is an operating adjustment from the Telecommunications Access Minnesota Fund, not the general fund, to support some salary pressures and maintain service levels at the Office of Accessibility within Minute, which is a team of 2 plus a student worker. Those are all the change items. Happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Well, thank you very much. You really moved on quickly, and I appreciate that. On your slide number 9, could you please, it says here, reduce tech debt, security, scalability, new capabilities. It's a large amount, $12.4 million in 22-23, and ongoing $2 million. Could you please explain the dollar amount for each of the items that I listed here, starting with the tech debt?
So this is to fund a move to the cloud. So it is to fund professional technical services, contractors, and staff with the needed skill sets to really operate in a cloud environment. It's also intended to help address the cost bubble that exists when we are paying for both on-premise hosting and cloud service hosting. So it would help pay for some of those cloud service costs during that bubble period and help agencies manage the transition, because that's a well-known industry cost bubble that any organization faces. Okay, it will also help fund some tools, collaboration communication tools via Microsoft that are unbudgeted, or cloud service tools that are going to be needed moving forward.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. But my question was not how you replied to your goals and intentions. My question had to do with what is the dollar amount, the $12.4 million, in 22-23, you're listing 4 things: reduce tech debt, security, scalability, and new capabilities. What's the dollar amount you are going to spend for each of those 4 items? What is the tech debt? How much does that need to be? Where is the debt to and whom? Just explain the tech debt and how many dollars you're allocating for that.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Apologies. So the dollar amounts at the top there on the right don't break down into the 4 bullets below. Those are the value, the aspects of value that are derived from the investment. How they do break down is what I was sort of rattling off there, which is a breakdown between some staff costs, some professional technical services costs, some software costs, and some cloud service costs.
Well,
and we're happy to follow up with that breakdown. This is an intent to just communicate the value of the investment to you as clearly as possible.
Yeah, Assistant Commissioner, value. We're a finance committee as we're dealing with these numbers here. So it's about the money, what you want to do with it, how you want to spend it. And so, we'll need much more information there. Since we're just short of time here, I want to try and get others in. We will have the language, I hope, soon because that's where we really take an action, is having the actual budget language. So, Assistant Commissioner, that will do for today. I'm going to go on to others. Maybe you could give more information as we continue here waiting for the actual language. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Eitan and Commissioner Tomes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, we're going to go ahead then, and we're going to move on to the Board of Accountancy. Ms. Johnson, welcome. Again, for members, you have, she doesn't have a PowerPoint for this, but you all have a document that has been handed out to you in regards to the Board of Accountancy. So if you have it in hand here, that is what she will be using. And you can go ahead and use that as you, Ms. Johnson, speaks. Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Welcome to the committee. Again, your name and title for the audio record, and you can proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Doreen Johnson. I'm the Executive Director at the Minnesota Board of Accountancy. May I proceed?
Yes, please.
I am here to ask for a one full-time equivalent for the Board of Accountancy. The Board of Accountancy is responsible for ensuring that the standards are there to protect the public as it relates to public accounting work. I've given you slides. We license approximately 17,000 to 18,000 individuals, as well as about 1,600 firms right now. Our funds go directly to the general fund. We are a net profit to the state of Minnesota. I didn't ask for a full-time equivalent in the last budget cycle. As you may recall, we were in a totally different situation as far as talking to about money, and we were asked
Can
to
you lean into the microphone.
Excuse
it's
me. We were
hard
asked
to get, and we want to hear what you have
sure
to say.
We were asked not to have full-time or to add additional staffing. However, what's happened for our agency? I'm also the director of the board that licenses architects, engineers, land surveyors, landscape architecture, geology, and soil science. Why is that important to this story? It's important because as a result of the two agencies sharing a back office, we've had a lot of interagency agreements. As the other agency has had retirements, those interagency agreements, based on the service needs that need to be delivered, have had to be canceled. Therefore, I'm really struggling and short with the need for another full-time equivalent to meet the needs of the certified public accountants and the public accounting industry that we do. So I am asking for an annual spend of $120,000 out of the general fund, to which we put our licensing fees into it, so that we can obtain a full-time equivalent to handle the changes to licensing, some oversight to make the changes and the demands that are required of the agency. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. So, Ms. Johnson, on the Board of Accountancy, you charge fees, and do all of those fees go into the general fund, Ms. Johnson?
Madam Chair, members of the committees and the public, yes, all of the fees go directly to the general fund.
And what amount of revenue do you collect from those fees, and what is your current operating budget for the Board of Accountancy, Ms. Johnson?
Rats. Madam Chair, I didn't bring all of that. I believe we bring in excess of $1 million per year in comparison to what, and that includes, that's not including our appropriations. We bring in over excess of $1 million.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. That was kind of the point I was trying to make. You are a net contributor above and beyond the fees. Have you considered reducing fees to match your appropriation, Ms. Johnson?
Madam Chair, we have two issues. Yes, that is going before the Executive Committee for the Board of Accountancy, actually, I think next month. The other issue that we have is our software system is not on the main minute system. We have a standalone software system, and we are also having to make that assessment based on recommendations from Minute. So before we reduce the fees dramatically, we need to see what that's going to cost to replace that entire system. And that's also part of the consideration being discussed with the Executive Committee and the full board.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Members, just to realize that whenever an entity pays fees, but it goes into the general fund instead of a special revenue account. When it goes into a special revenue account, those excess dollars accrue and then can be used for such things as an IT upgrade, which takes more of a specific amount of money over a period of time. And with a special revenue account, it enables you to accrue dollars to have for that. So I'm a big supporter of fees going into special revenue accounts. But in the meantime, as we move it from general fund into a special revenue account, it's a loss to the general fund. And so that's the issue there. But just to let you know, Ms. Johnson, if you went to a special revenue account, those dollars would accrue to you on a year-on-year basis. And then when you needed to make an ask like this, that's money segregated for your Board of Accountancy to begin with. I'd highly encourage you and your board to consider that and supporting that sort of a move, and especially right now when we have a surplus and we're in a situation, $1 million is a relatively smaller amount considering the whole budget, but it's a big deal, and we want to see the Board of Accountancy be able to do their work, and that's an important part of it. Those are my comments for you, Ms. Johnson. It's just discussion kind of thing. We thank you for your work. Would you want to make any other closing comments otherwise?
No, Madam Chair. I thank you for the support that the Senate has given to the Board of Accountancy in the past, and I ask for your support in this supplemental change request.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson.
Pleasure.
With that, we're going to go ahead and go to the Humanities, Minnesota Humanities Center, and so we have a presentation there. Mr. Lindsay, if you want to go ahead and state your name and title for the audio record, and then you can go ahead with your presentation, Mr. Lindsay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kevin Lindsay, and I have the pleasure of serving as the CEO of the Minnesota Humanities Center. Appreciate the opportunity to address the committee as part of the governor's budget for funding to the Minnesota Humanities Center. I believe that you have all received the slide presentation from the Minnesota Humanities Center. I will try to keep this very brief for you. Are you able to see the presentation at the time, Madam Chair?
Yes. Well, Mr. Lindsay, we all have paper copies, but the big thing is for the online folks who are viewing online who may not have that, though they can print them, look at them, download them from the committee website. Are you looking to, looks like it's coming on screen. Now it's coming.
Okay, there we go. Mm-hmm. So this is the building of the Minnesota Humanities Center. It is on the east side of St. Paul. The vision and mission is stated there. I think it's important in trying to keep time. We have 8 minutes left. I'm sure to your schedule here. It's important for folks to understand that we're an affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities, and with that, we seek to provide services for all Minnesotans throughout the entirety of the state. Our respective request. Is a 3% increase to our general fund base. Half of this would go to a cost of living increase for salaries and benefits, and then half would be to modernize Minnesota Humanities IT infrastructure. This request would maintain our current level of service. As articulated by the Board of Accountancy, we did not make this request at the start of this biennium because of the particular financial situation that the state found itself in with and trying to figure out how to deal with the pandemic. We believe that the funding increase as to cost of living adjustment and for benefits will allow us to maintain our current staffing levels. We're trying to retain the highly trained humanities officers that we have and to ensure that, again, these benefits flow throughout the entirety of the state. The other half of this request is to purchase laptops and software to help MHC staff, again, deliver programming service throughout the state. The total amount of the ask, again, is $22,000. Again, the amount of the request is $22,000. Again, appreciating the hard work of the committee, I'll try to keep this brief and to see if there's any questions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Lindsay. I don't see any questions here today. Thank you very much for your presentation. I appreciate your time. And again, we're looking forward to the actual language, which is critical to us taking any future action or consideration. Look forward to having that. Well, members, with the business of our committee being completed for today, we will see you tomorrow. And with that, we are adjourned.